It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. It's guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Al Horford, 2-for-2, and a steal.
Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Celtics come roaring out of the gate.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The game on lock for sure.
With the 14th pick in the 2019 NBA Draft, the Boston Celtics selection, Romeo Langford from Indiana University.
Boston is going to be selecting for the Sixers here. Philadelphia will send the Celtics number 24 and 33.
With the 22nd pick in the 2019 NBA Draft, the Boston Celtics select Grant Williams from the University of Tennessee.
The Celtics trading their number 24 pick that they got from the Philadelphia 76ers. According to reports, they'll receive the 2020 Milwaukee Bucks first-round pick from Phoenix that was part of that Eric Bledsoe deal.
We have breaking news according to Sham Sharanya of The Athletic. Aaron Baines has been traded to the Phoenix Suns.
With the 33rd pick in the 2019 NBA Draft, the Philadelphia 76ers select Carson Edwards from Purdue University.
Welcome into the Sports Hub Celtics Show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, and you, 617-779-0985. So that was the night for the Celtics at the NBA Draft on Thursday. And the question from a caller earlier, based on what you read about some of these players, Romeo Langford, Grant Williams, Carson Edwards, okay, there's a lot of upside, but you hear they're good guys. Like, these are guys that Brad Stevens would want to work with. So the question from the caller was, Chris, did the Celtics draft really for a culture change more than anything else on Thursday night over maybe talent and upside?
I don't think so. I mean, I think they certainly took culture into account, but when you look at a guy like Romeo Langford, I mean, you're making that pick based on the talent. This is a kid who, coming out of high school in Indiana, was a, you know, top five in the country as a recruit. It was the three Duke kids, Zion Williamson, R.J. Barrett. Barrett was actually number one ahead of Zion. Cam Reddish, and then Bol Bol, at least in the ESPN 100. And you look at Langford, that's a kid you can dream on. Like, he had a sort of a disappointing year. I think Indiana had a disappointing year. But you're taking a flyer on his talent. You know, I'm not saying he's a bad kid. I think he's probably a good kid. He seems very soft-spoken. But I don't think they were like, oh, we need to reset our culture here. Let's draft Romeo Langford at the end of the lottery. They were like, all right, here's a guy that could become a star. Let's take a flyer on him. The Williams kid, I think, spent more time in college, obviously. Two-time SEC player of the year. Won it back-to-back. Led the conference in scoring. His mom is a NASA engineer. He seems exceptionally bright. I know a lot of people around here, I love the fact that he sort of called out Kyrie Irving's flat earth theory. Yeah. Williams is a really bright kid. I mean, he turned down Ivy League offers to go to Tennessee.
So, I didn't know that.
Okay. Yeah, he did. He's a really smart kid. So maybe part of that is sort of having somebody who you know, has a high basketball IQ and a high IQ overall and can sort of deal with Brad Stevens maybe on a slightly different level. But the flip side of that would be, well, wait, Kyrie Irving's a pretty smart guy, and how did that go? So, again, I think when you look at it overall, what I'm saying is I think the Celtics drafted the guys they thought were the best players, the most talented players, the best fits. I don't think they looked at it and said, oh, no, this was such a horrendous year from a culture standpoint and a chemistry standpoint, that that's what we need to do. This was not like Mike Mayock and the Raiders saying, like, you know, in the NFL draft.
First
saying,
round arm talent.
Yeah, you know, no, but saying like, we're going to draft a bunch of leaders. And like, you know, that was their whole thing, even though they brought in Antonio Brown and Vontaze Burfict. That was the whole thing. We're going to draft a bunch of leaders and change the culture. That's not what the Celtics were doing, in my opinion.
And Edwards, and, you know, shame on me. I mean, I got caught up in watching highlight reels, what people are tweeting about on Thursday night, but it seems like the kid can shoot the lights out.
Yeah, no, he was a fantastic, fantastic college player. You know, how much of that will translate to the NBA, I'm a little uncertain on that. I'm not as high on him as some other people. But it would be great. I mean, the Celtics are due for one of these second-round finds that other teams seem to be able to pull out. You know, it's sort of been a while since maybe Glenn Davis was the last guy. It's been a while since they've been able to take one of these second-round picks and turn it into an actual player who can help a team. So maybe Carson Edwards is that guy. And with the uncertainty at point guard and his ability to shoot, there could be a role there for him.
What is it you don't like about him?
He's small, and I don't think he's particularly explosive. And I think there's a craftiness to his game, in my opinion, that you can, I don't want to say get away with at the college level, but it will work at the college level. I just think his shots are going to be a lot more contested, and it's going to be harder for him to get them at the NBA level. And I also thought there was an element of his game, at least earlier in the year in Purdue, from what I saw. And look, I didn't see every Purdue game, but Carson Edwards was a guy every college basketball fan knew about coming into this year, coming back to Purdue. I thought there was an element of his game with that team this year where some of his scoring was volume scoring. You know, it was the volume of shots he was able to take led to some of his numbers. So I'm just not, I don't dislike the guy.
Was he chucking up like 40 shots a night type thing? Or
no, but I think that there were times where he was clearly their primary option. And I think he could play in a way where maybe efficiency wasn't necessarily as important because they knew they needed him to get points. And it was like, okay, you know, just go out there and find a way to get points. In the NBA, I don't think he's going to get that volume of shots.
All right, so they make these three picks. They trade Aaron Baines in the 24th pick to the Suns for a future first-round pick. And I feel like, at least based on social media and some of the phone calls into Felger and Maz yesterday and the midday show, like just, you know, everything yesterday, most Celtics fans are just, like, they're straight pissed. Like, they're angry about this. And my question to them, Chris, is what the hell did you expect? Did you think that they were going to try to get up to four or try to flip some of these picks and bring in a Bradley Beal? Like, okay, these were some of the rumors being bandied about, but you've seen how these things have played out before. There's rumors, and then there's typically not much movement by the Celtics on draft night. There's not a big splash. And after everything that's transpired over this year, or at least in recent weeks, are you really that surprised?
Like, no. I mean, yeah, I don't know what people were expecting. Like, yeah, it's interesting to me because it goes back. I feel like we do this every year, right? Like we wind ourselves up. And in past years, they were a lot closer, whether it was Jimmy Butler or, you know, the year they drafted Terry Rozier moving up to get Justice Winslow. It was a situation in past years where there was a more realistic expectation of this happening, and it didn't happen. And I'm not surprised it didn't happen this year. Now, Jackie McMullen, that clip that we played, did mention that they were trying to package two picks to move up to four, and the Hawks beat him to it. I am confident in saying that they did have discussions about moving up. You never know what the price is or what they're willing to give up or not willing to give up. And, you know, we can talk with Chris Forsberg and B-Rob about that on the Sports Hub Celtics show. So they did investigate it. But at the end of the day, am I surprised that they didn't pull it off? No. I mean, look, they tried to move up last year, too. You know, they were interested in moving up for Luka Doncic. And they explored it, and they made a decision that there were guys they were not willing to give up. Now, we can debate whether they should have given up those guys, yes. But, you know, they didn't do it.
What was the – refresh me, because I know that Jimmy Stewart, the executive producer of Felger and Maz, had said that there was real interest for the Celtics in Luka Doncic, but what was the permutations you heard for a deal?
I will say it would have involved giving up Jaylen Brown.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, these are all easy to do in hindsight. And, you know, we argued about it on Felger and Maz during the week. Like, Mike brought up, like, well, now thinking about it and Kawhi Leonard and that he was available and you didn't want to give up Jaylen Brown. Like, okay, it's so easy to say that now. Believe me, I would have done that. Everyone would have done that, considering how everything played out for the Raptors and Kawhi this year and how he returned to form. But at that time, when the Celtics are coming off a season in which they get within a game, really a terrible fourth quarter, of going to the NBA Finals, without their all-star superstars in Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving, who went out that April with the knee injury, well, why wouldn't you think, oh, had these two guys back, we're going to be the best team in the East. We have a legitimate shot to win the championship, or at least have a competitive finals against Golden State in this last season. So after that, like, I can understand why they wouldn't have made that. Danny Ainge would have had to have been a mind reader to see what the hell was coming to make either of those kind of...
No, there's truth to that, and like you're right. Hindsight's always 20/20. But the one thing that I will say when you look at it, and this is where I think maybe you could just globally criticize Danny Ainge, is do the Celtics have a tendency to overvalue their own ass? Like, they do.
Well,
they do.
I mean,
and I love Jay. You know how much I love Jalen. You know, I loved the pick. I was excited when they made the pick. I thought they'd make the pick that year. I'm emotionally invested in the pick and the player. But I do think that overall, not just Jalen, but when it comes to what their draft picks are worth, not wanting to give up like a pick at the end of the first round to bring in a rental like a Tyreek Evans, the times in the past when they've held on to second round picks, you know, overall, I feel like there's a little bit of a tendency over there to overvalue their assets relative to what the rest of the league thinks they're worth.
Oh, and even prior to this season, I mean, they've done that. Look at Jay Crowder. You know, there's guys that they've pumped up, and they look at like, oh, no, we can't move on from
that. I mean, they're the best at the pump and dump.
They really
are. And that's part of that strategy. Like, part of it is strategy, but it also comes back to the thing Felger's talked about, too. It's like, is there a blind spot here where Danny has to not just win every deal, but crush the other team?
Yeah, maybe. Pete and Pembroke on the Celtics culture change, or at least how they drafted on Thursday night. Hey, Pete.
Hey, guys. Now, Jasper, you're probably going to disagree with me.
Okay.
But as far as the draft goes, I think they did real good as far as resetting the culture, having good people committed character-wise. But I think one thing that people are forgetting is that we need to get rid of all the bad characters first. And I'm specifically talking about the whole Jaylen Brown thing where he was disagreeing with teammates on the court. And I like him as a talent, but I think he's too strong-headed for the team. And I think they may need to explore a trade with him. What do you guys think of that?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't look at Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum or, you know, even Terry Rozier, who I've been pretty critical of. I don't think they're bad guys. And I don't think they have bad character.
No, headstrong. You know,
they are headstrong.
And I think due to their age, sorry to cut you off. For me, I think both of them, like even if you look at them as problematic, and Brown, because he was outspoken, for me, they get a mulligan. They're young.
Exactly.
It was one bad year.
Yeah.
It was a bad mix. I'm not going to chalk it up as, oh, these guys are complete a-holes.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Now, look, were these guys feeling themselves a little bit after going to the conference finals without Kyrie and Hayward? Yeah, they were. I mean, you know, Jason Tatum chilling with Kobe and being on the cover of Slam Magazine and all that stuff. You know, that stuff... They always say, don't believe the hype. These guys believe the hype. There's no question about it. And so that was a mistake. But they're young, and they can learn from that. And I don't think that they're bad character guys. So I'm not interested in just moving on from them just strictly from a – at least Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, you know, from a character standpoint. I'm not interested in moving on from them from that standpoint. You know, with Rozier, it's a little different. I don't think he's a bad guy. I just don't think he's really willing to accept the role. And I'm not sure he's realistic about – where he really fits in the hierarchy of players in the NBA.
Well, the Celtics brass is certainly putting a positive spin on how things have gone as of late with this team, but how do they feel behind closed doors? We'll get some insight from Brian Robb, who covers the Celtics for Boston Sports Journal. We'll do that next here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
The excitement is building for another banner.
Round for three, got it.
The Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
So much speculation about Kyrie's future, Al's future as well.
Yeah, Kyrie didn't opt in. Al didn't opt in. Al has opted out, I believe. So they're, you know, free birds in a sense, and we're going to find out in the next couple of weeks what's happening with all of that. And we're in the mix with basically everybody, you know. So we're going to see what happens. It's a really important time of the year for the Celtics. This year in particular is really important for us, and we think tonight's a good start. Three building blocks.
Building blocks. How would you describe the phase you guys are in right now?
Yeah, building, I guess. I just said it. Yeah. You know, building or retooling. Listen, you're starting with a core of Marcus Smart, Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. Start with that and then add in the rest of the roster, not to slight anybody, and then restricted rights on Terry and possibilities with our free agents. You know, I got to tell you, it's a good time to be trying to retool like this. But on the other hand, the season ended on a down note. Nobody's, I have no confusion about that. It was a down note. Yeah. We won 5 and then lost 4. Not satisfactory.
Yeah, it's a good time to retool, everyone. Where you thought what the Celtics would be a year ago. Ugh. principal owner of the Celtics, Wick Grosbeck, after Thursday night's NBA Draft, Sports Hub Celtics show, Jim Murray, Chris Gasper. And joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, covering the Celtics for Boston Sports Journal, some of the best coverage in the city, that would be Brian Robb. What's up, B-Robb?
Afternoon, boys. How are we doing?
Pretty good. So, you know, they're obviously, the brass and Wick are putting a positive spin on this whole thing and how it's all gone wrong over the last 12 months, and especially in what's been a bad week with Al Horford opting out, which I would imagine has to be a surprise to them. So, okay, positive spin, happy face, but behind closed doors or being around the team, how do you think that they really feel, B-Rub?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're kind of coming to terms with, you know, you could kind of see this coming from afar as the season progressed, but just to see it go into motion here before free agency has even begun, it's definitely a hit. It's a hit to the long-term vision of a franchise, and it's a hit in terms of what the team can do in the interim. And especially you look around the league now this upcoming year with Durant's injury and Klay Thompson's injury, like things look really wide open now, and you've been hoarding all these assets to make the to put yourself in position for this point, and it all gets kind of blown up by Kyrie Irving. And that is, you know, you put faith in a guy, you made a bet in a guy, and he leaves you high and dry and obviously leads to other guys walking out the door as well. So, but I will say just, you know, Danny Ainge was very, very, I don't want to say defined, but they're clearly trying to pick themselves off the mat here and retool quickly. And the cupboard isn't bare here, which is the good news, with obviously Tatum, Brown, Smart, and then whatever Gordon Hayward is next year. So it's not like, you know, we're not starting from scratch like 5 years ago, essentially after the KG deal. But, you know, the window to contend, barring a lot of things going right this next season, looks like it's going to be at least another year or two down the line.
Yeah, you're right, B-Rob. Obviously, I was there at the draft as well, and I think you were not overstating it when you said define. I mean, Danny did seem define. You said that there were players dying to come to Boston, that the organization, it seemed like a little bit of sort of damage control. You didn't want the idea out there that this was not a desirable destination. Is that something, though, behind the scenes that the Celtics are concerned about? You know, we all know how it can work sometimes in life and in sports where perception becomes reality, and the perception right now is that the Celtics are a little bit of a sinking ship.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to be concerned about the optics of this if you're the Celtics. This is Al Horford. That's the first guy who came here 3 years ago and left. You know, you lost to him in the playoffs, but the summer before he signed with you. So you look at that and how far things have come 3 years later, where you've had the progression of being steadily on the rise again. You know, all good things for the last few summers, and now. It's not a huge, you know, a complete thud, but it's a huge step back from that front. And then obviously, you know, Kyrie Irving, we'll get a better gauge of what people think about him, you know, around the league in terms of how players are viewing this. And was it the Celtics that screwed up? Was it Kyrie that screwed up? And, you know, if so, I think we're going to get a pretty good sense of that if the Celtics, you know, go full steam ahead into free agency here and try to get meetings. Obviously, you're not going to get meetings with the likes of, you know, Kawhi or Durant stuff, but if they want to go hard after some second-tier guys, whether it's, you know, I'd be surprised they'd go after, like, a Kemba Walker or even a Tobias Harris, but even a guy like Vucevic, like, if that is actually their plan, they're going to find out, you know, how well they can still sell the remaining quarter guys and how much, if any, impact seeing, you know, guys like Horford, you know, kind of walk away here and say, hey, you know, I have a better chance to contend elsewhere on top of obviously getting a bigger payday.
Talking to Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal, joining us here on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. So, B-Rob, you mentioned Vucevic. I know there's interest there. They're sniffing around Clint Capela with Houston in a potential trade, but they had their own guy at the five, and Aaron Baines, who opted back in, and then they ended up trading him to Phoenix. I don't know. That one feels like a bit of a head-scratcher in terms of the financial aspects of it, too. So can you explain that a little better as to why they traded Aaron Baines?
Yeah, you're on that 100%, Jim, in terms of like what's really going on here, because they obviously packaged that with the 24th pick for a future pick from the Suns next year, which is actually a Bucks first round pick, which means it's going to end up in the 25 or 30 range. So you're getting essentially a worse pick next year. And so I think the Celtics are trying to do here is, number one, with Baines, once they got a sense that Horford's gone and, you know, Baynes is like $5.5 million for Baynes. That's not like a terrible contract by any means. But the center free agent market is just loaded with guys, you know, that are pretty much equal to Baynes in terms of talent level. And so you're probably going to be able to pay someone half of that for what pretty much what Baynes can do. So I think that was number one in terms of the Celtics trying to gain some flexibility. They didn't want to have to lose an asset if they wanted to dump Baynes and plan someone else later. So they figured, hey, let's be preemptive here and get rid of him now. And then the other part of that deal was just getting a future first-round pick, which essentially kicking the can a little bit on their assets. So you don't want to use all those picks now because it's like going into, you know, when you drive a car off a lot, it loses a ton of its value, i.e. when you, you know, you bring in, you know, Ty Jerome in a year from now, the guy that went at 24 is not going to be worth nearly as much as a pick in the 20s next year because the unknown of a future draft pick is always the appeal to a team because you can say, okay, that guy, you know, it's, we're going to get someone we like with that guy, and that's going to be appealing. So the Celtics kicked the can on the asset. They have two future first-round picks for next year in addition to their own, and they're kind of positioning themselves here to, you know, to be able to make the jump at the next star that becomes available still. They wanted to, you know, make sure that they had all their ducks in a row for that spot so they can combine those picks with whatever talent they don't want to move forward with on this roster whenever that next guy becomes available. Unless, you know, Danny has something up his sleeve and it's going to happen this summer, but I'm not sure that guy's out there right now.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that, B-Rob. You know, I think that they're positioning themselves to take advantage of the next guy who shakes loose. The problem is you don't know when that's going to happen or who that guy's going to be. And that brings me to sort of two questions for you that I think are related. You know, one, what is the plan here with the cap space? And I think you touched on it a little bit in terms of Vucevic. But also, what's the plan at point guard? You know, is it to bring Terry Rozier back? Would they look at D'Angelo Russell, or, you know, will they just sort of roll with the young guys that they have and say, hey, Gordon Hayward's going to be our primary ball handler?
Yeah, it's, you have all kinds of options there, Chris, as you laid out. If Terry Rozier comes back, we'll start there. Like, he can't feel great about his, you know, he shouldn't feel great about his value bottom league anyway after last year. But then you saw what other teams that had reported interest in him did on draft night, the Bulls taking a point guard, White at number 8. And obviously the Celtics taking Carson Edwards at number 33, and they by no means need to bring Rozier back. If the price is right there and Danny and Brad and him have conversations where they tell him, okay, no guarantee you're going to start here. You're going to play, but you need to, like, what happened last year is unacceptable. Then it's possible he comes back, but I would not expect him back here in a starting role. So from there you have options in terms of how does this team want to, you know, use their assets? Do they want to spend big money 4 years on a guy like Vucevic for close to max money? It could be theoretically a nice upgrade in offense compared to Horford, since that's a 20-12 guy with not a lot of talent around him in Orlando, but it's also going to be a pretty big step back on the defensive end. And he is, I think, 29 years old. So I wouldn't be crazy about committing that kind of money to him because I'm not sure he's worth that unless, you know, Brad Stevens is really saying, like, I need the big that can shoot, pass, do it all for my offense for things to work here. So Russell doesn't make a ton of sense to me either, just in the sense that, you know, you already have guys in Tatum and Brown that can create on their own a little bit. And Russell, he doesn't have the greatest track record. He had a great last season, but he was kind of up and down before that over the last couple of years. And only had his breakout last year at Brooklyn when Caris LeVert got hurt. So I wouldn't, again, be crazy about investing big money with him. Anyway, so I could see them going, like, maybe trying to invest in younger guys on smaller type deals, guys like, you know, Kevon Looney or a big man like Thomas Bryant, who's you can probably get for pretty cheap from Washington, just like building things up like that, building up assets that you can maybe flip down the line. Or the other alternative I think they're going to explore, if they don't get the guys they want, rent out that cap room for guys that can help you on contracts, but they're overpaid. And so they could get an asset, get a first-round pick or two for taking those guys, and then pretty much roll over that cap space next summer so you can still make a big splash where if you make that trade in the next 12 months to get another star, then you can approach free agency next summer and be like, okay, we still have the cap rooms for that third guy we want to bring in here.
All right, one last thing in about 30 seconds with the time remaining we have with you, B-Rob. Are you going to be covering Summer League for BSJ and excited to see Taco Fall, if so?
Yeah, I look forward to Time Lord and Taco Fall just running the pick and roll there. it is going to be must-see TV. Like, for all the years that Summer League has been hyped up for the Celtics, it's obviously not great that might be, you know, it's the most exciting part of their summer right now is what this team's going to look like. But between Robert Williams, Taco Fall, Grant Williams, Carson Edwards is going to be a lot of fun to watch out there. And then we don't know if Romeo Langford's going to be healthy or not, but that's a lot of talent on the floor there. And so it's going to be, I don't think Taco Fall is going to be around. You know, he's just going to be something fun to watch in summer. He won't be here over the long term, but it's a huge summer for Robert Williams. He's going to have plenty of opportunity here, and this will be a kind of test run to see how much he's going to be able to jump in the rotation. And then the young guys will see what they got and see if they can make an imprint.
All right. Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal, covers the Celtics. Follow him on Twitter. Always appreciate you taking the time.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. B-Rob joins us via the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Why did Al Horford have a change of heart this week? We'll get insight from another guest. We'll be joined by Chris Forsberg, NBC Sports Boston, coming up next. First, though, Sports Hub headlines, Mike Sarge-Riley, who has news, breaking news, on a major trade in the NHL. He'll fill you in on that. And then back with the Sports Hub Celtics show after this.
Take us with you on your phone with the TuneIn app.
That's too easy right there.
It's the Sports Hub Celtics show on 98.5 Sports Hub.
I think the Celtics made him a good offer. I can't tell you what it was, but I do think they did make him a 4-year offer that was a pretty healthy one. And think about that. I think Al's 37 at the end of that contract. So it's not like they said, oh, well, we're going to lowball Al Horford. There are teams out there that are very, very interested in Al Horford. And one of them, I believe, is the Dallas Mavericks.
And I'm just going to tell you the number that is out there that they're talking about. I have no idea whether it's true. 4 years, $112 million is the number floating around.
That was Jackie McMullen, Adrian Wojnarowski on, I forget the name of the podcast that they did yesterday.
The Hoops Collective?
Yeah, the Hoops Collective. That's what I was talking about, Al Horford. And that there was a 4-year deal offered by the Boston Celtics. Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, and Chris Forsberg, who covers the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston. He joins us now on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. What up, Chris?
What up? What's going down, boys?
So, were you surprised at how quickly this changed with Al Horford, and why did he have a change of heart? Because he opted out, but the talks were immediately, this is just to get everything figured out. It was just a formality. And then later that night, Steve Bulpet, obviously close with the team of the Boston Herald, says, oh, no, everything's falling apart here, and it doesn't sound like Al's going to be coming back. What happened?
Yeah, it was weird because especially like the whole tenor up until that point had been, he's going to opt out, but they'll probably try to find a deal. And what my guess is, like when Jason Glushon, the agent for Al Horford, calls the Celtics that Tuesday morning and says, all right, we're formally opting out. Where do we stand? And the Celtics, you know, probably looking at the landscape of their team, and they sit there and say, hey, listen, we want Al here. We want to help this young core grow, but, you know, there are some limits to what this team can do and how far they can go. You know, I don't know if they would go as far as 4 years. I mean, that puts Al at 37. That's not really on the timeline of where you're going now. But he is just insanely valuable to this team. And if you want to be competitive this year, that they did probably have to at least be aggressive in that pursuit. And so I think Al's team, armed with the knowledge that there's 4-year deals out there, and like, who knows if that $112 million number is going to stick, but that's sort of the game of password that's going around right now. They're going to have options, whether that's Dallas, the Clippers, or some mystery team out there. He's going to be in need for teams that want to go to another level. And so, maybe they felt comfortable at that point that, all right, let's explore this, and we'll see what happens from here.
Chris, as you understand at this point, what's the plan for the Celtics?
Well, if you listen to Danny the other night, Gas, I mean, we're sitting there, and I don't know about you, but I thought it was pretty defiant, the whole, you know, the idea that Kyrie Irving and Al Horford are walking out the door, and he's sitting up there saying people are dying to play for us. I don't know if that's a brave face or if they know something that we don't in terms of what's possible this summer. I do think they like their odds of going into free agency with the ability to get to max cap space. And I don't know how that's going to play out. Like, they because a lot of the top free agents probably didn't expect the Celtics to have max cap space. I wonder if they're like, if any of these guys even plan to talk to Boston, but now maybe they do. Like, and I don't know who that will be. I mean, if Kawhi's dead set on the Clippers, I don't think you all of a sudden sneak in a meeting, but I do think there'll be interest out there among top players about, okay, what's Boston's situation? And is it enough to lure them away? I don't know. You know, there's still certainly some murkiness about where this is going. But I think that's Boston's plan A, is to try and get a star to keep this thing riding and hope that you get the perfect storm of young guys developing and Gordon Hayward getting back to an all-star level, and maybe, just maybe, there's a chance in a wide-open league that you're at least competitive. Plan B is probably take on bad contracts, get some more assets, you know, embrace yourself for whatever that next star becomes available. And, you know, while I sit here and say this is as cloudy as it's ever been in terms of who that next star is, like, after every dude, like, all right, Jimmy Butler wasn't there, all right, they're on to Paul George. All right, Paul George isn't there, then Kawhi becomes available. Kyrie, you know, Anthony Davis has always obviously been lusted over for years. You know, I don't know who that next dude is, and it's hard to sort of identify the situation that lines up, but inevitably there'll be someone. And so the Celtics rolled one of their picks forward to next year this year. They've got three first-round picks in next year's draft. They're going to be in the game when that next player comes along. And so I just think it's sort of trying to find the right place to strike.
All right. So with that, and it's Chris Forsberg, NBC Sports Boston, joining us, the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. I'm going to make the assumption, Chris, that you have a good rapport with Terry Rozier simply based on the Celtics people in cars getting coffee bit that you did during the season. So with that, do you think Rozier will be back? Because it feels like this whole thing has changed too.
Yeah, I think, it might hinge on what the Celtics' plans are. And they're playing it close to the vest about where that cap space could go. So, okay, if, like, all of a sudden Kemba Walker wanted to have a cup of coffee and talk to you about what's possible, like, Terry Rozier, probably not a possibility. You're going to renounce his rights and bring use that space to bring back or chase a top-line free agent. If you don't have that possibility, if you're more likely to use that space for a $24 million guy and you chase Nick Vucevic, to fill your center need, and you need a point guard and you still have space to bring Terry Rozier back at a comfortable number, maybe you're more likely to go that route. Like I said, both sides have seemed to keep the door open in the right circumstance. I think the Celtics want him at the right price, where if it doesn't work out, they can still maybe move him as a tradable asset. They certainly need contracts in that $12 to $15 million range, as they found out the hard way here in this whole Anthony Davis pursuit. And I think that Terry likes the idea of getting thrown the keys to the car, right? Like, he keeps talking about how he got stuff in the trunk this past season. Well, you know, if you tell him he's coming back and he's going to be your starting point guard, he's going to be on board. And so both sides sit there and say, oh, let's forget about that stupid ESPN tour and move on. But I don't think the door is closed at all.
I want to ask you about the draft a little bit, Chris, because, you know, I think that there was sort of a thought going into it that there's no way the Celtics are going to end up with, you know, four young guys here. They had the three first-round picks going in and one second-round pick. They end up with two first-rounders and two second-round picks. When you look at Romeo Langford and Grant Williams, just the first-round picks here, how long do you think it will take those guys to contribute? And do you think the Celtics got their targets in each case? Or do you feel like maybe there was a player they coveted more who went, you know, right before them? There's some thought that maybe Miami took Tyler Hero right out from under their nose at 13 when they took Langford at 14.
Yeah, you know, we were joking on, we were broadcasting down from the floor, and we could sort of hear the cheers or grunts from a little bit from the behind the closed curtains where the Celtics were in their room. Listen, I don't know. Like, I definitely think there was interest in Tyler Hero. He'd had a good workout there, made a ton of shots. They obviously had a need for shooting. I don't know how disappointed they were. I don't know. I never got the sense, like, in the Justice Winslow year that they had that one guy they were lusting after. I think we all know the Celtics were pretty interested in moving up as high as four and trying to get into that range. Maybe they had their eyes on Garland or Culver or one of those guys that was after the perceived top three. I think with Langford, I think they saw, you know, potential, a kid who was really high coming out of high school who didn't have a great season because of injury in part. You know, listen, there's risk there. You don't quite know how he's going to pan out. But I think back to, like, Avery Bradley was, you know, ranked ahead of John Wall coming out of high school and didn't have a great first year at Texas. They rolled the dice on him. It took a little while for him to develop, but different players. But maybe there's a chance that Langford is more talented than the spot they got him at. I think Grant Williams is probably like built to compete right now. He's got the NBA ready body. I keep going back to it. The Athletic did an awesome story about him getting tested at P3 and having like ranking the 96th percentile among all players they've ever tested, including like current NBA guys in terms of where his strength is. I think him and Semi Ojeleye are going to batter some walls with medicine balls this year. And at least you feel comfortable throwing him out there and seeing what he can do. And like, honestly, I know you said the first round, but like Carson Edwards was a guy I thought that they would probably target in the first round with maybe that pick 24. And based on their maneuvering, they were able to get him at 33. It gives you a little bit more flexibility. He doesn't have to be like necessarily be offered a contract. And there's some flexibility there if he doesn't prove kind of to be ready. But the kid had an amazing NCAA tournament. He's clearly got a skill set they need in scoring, and they need point guards. I wouldn't be surprised if either Edwards or Tremont Waters is competitive for a role on this year's team.
One last thing quickly before we let you go, Chris. Obviously, a lot is going to change after the 30th. But just looking at the lay of the land in the East and how things have played out, because this isn't a disaster. It's not great, but it's not a disaster. Where do you tier the Celtics in the East as of right now, or if you had to foresee it after some moves?
Yeah, like right now, they're probably a mid-seed, and that's more reflective of the fact that the conference is probably going to be a little bit better than necessarily that they're, you know, just like one guy away or anything like that. You know, I still don't see them as having the top-end talent to be truly a contender once the playoffs roll around, like depending on how it works out for Philly and clearly with Giannis and the Bucks. I just think they're a cut below all those teams. And, like, listen, I don't know if they go out and sign Vucevic, if they're, like, all of a sudden elevated to that level. I think, again, a lot of things have to break right. Jason Tatum's got to make a jump in year three. Jaylen Brown's got to get more consistent on both sides. Gordon Hayward has to get back to being an all-star. But there's a world in which that all happens and that they're competitive. And I don't know if that's title contention or just, you know, a really good run in the East. But I do think they're in the mix. Heard Shaughnessy yelling on our network yesterday about this being a rebuild, and I'm just not on board with that. Like, there's a scenario where these young guys don't develop and, all right, you got to kind of reexamine how this is being built out. But I do think they're in the mix. And so free agency will dictate a lot of that and whether guys stay. And if Kawhi goes west, it gets a lot easier. So hard to handicap it right now. But as pessimistic as I was immediately after, like, I'm thinking, how is this team even going to be competitive? I do think there's a chance for them to sort of to stay in the mix a little bit.
All right. Chris Forsberg, NBC Sports Boston. Of course, some of the best Celtics coverage you can get in the city. Always catch him there and follow him on Twitter. Thanks for taking the time, Chris.
Thanks, boys. Take care.
You too. And also taking the time throughout the season on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. One more segment to go here in the last Sports Hub Celtics show of this season. If you want to join us, 617-779-0985. Get right to your calls after this.
Terry Rozier, he's going to pull up and shoot a three. Got it!
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Celtics cleared salary cap space last night, traded away Aaron Baines. I think they're setting up to go after one of the top point guards on the market. The Phoenix Suns made a deal before the draft last night that nobody paid attention to, offloading T.J. Warren to create salary cap space there. And I think the Chicago Bulls, even though they drafted Coby White last night, are going to be in the business for a point guard too. So we got major point guards on the market. We got Malcolm Brogdon. We got Terry Rozier. We got D'Angelo Russell. All three of them are restricted. All three of them may be able to be gotten. And the Celtics, Bulls, and don't forget about the Lakers need a point guard too. The moves last night set up a bidding war for those point guards.
All right, still work to be done for the Celtics. So it's not all that bad. It's not like they're completely starting over. It's just a retool, to use the word that Whit Grosbeck used. Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Derek and Acton, how do you foresee the Celtics' future?
Hello. Yeah, hey, guys. You're probably going to call me a green teamer, but I just don't believe the sky is falling. I think from a regular season perspective, record-wise, and from their success in the playoffs, there is something called addition by subtraction. I hate to say it, they were a better team without Kyrie. The big thing they got to do is just replace Horford, and they got $30 million in cap space. If they can do that, Hayward's coming back, and sounds like we might get our coach back. Apparently, he was moonlighting as a government professor last year, so you know he was really muted. And I think there's a lot of positive things that are coming our way, and especially you know, I don't think they would have let Baines go if they didn't have faith in Robert Williams.
Yeah, part of that salary cap maneuvering. I mean, I don't think that's a pure evaluation of the player. I think that's, you know, like salary cap maneuvering in terms of the league. But I will say, you know, there is a scenario here. It's a rosy scenario where the Celtics could actually be pretty good. like, you know, we're sort of running around saying, like, oh, you know, they don't have the elite talent, the top-end talent. And, like, on paper right now, they don't. But what if Jason Tatum takes the leap we expected him to take last year? What if Gordon Hayward goes back to being even 90% of what he was in Utah?
Yeah.
When he was so good, he was dragging that team to the playoffs, and not only into the playoffs, into the second round of the playoffs. And they might have gone, you know, even further if they hadn't run into the buzzsaw that was the Golden State Warriors in the second round there. What if that happens? What if we're all misreading this situation as badly as we misread the one last year when we thought they were going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread? I would say it's not the most likely scenario, but I think it's probably more possible than we're alluding to at this point.
Yeah, you have, at least theoretically, the talent, or at least the hope that some of this talent is going to flourish. And I think it is. There is going to be an element of addition by subtraction of getting Kyrie Irving out of that situation. Brad Stevens, who I think the more that we're going to find out once Kyrie is officially gone to another team, how much he got emasculated by him, Kyrie, last year. Yeah, no, there's a chance. I think that's why I'm just trying to be, I don't know, level-headed about this whole thing. It sucks what the expectations were at this time last year based on that, right?
Yeah, totally.
And we didn't expect any of this to really happen, especially even Horford opting out after, you know, and saying goodbye. But there's still things you can cross your fingers and hope on here. It's not a complete disaster. It's not a complete reset. It's just a retool. So I'm just sitting back. I'm not going to get angry about it and hope for the best. That's all. Just
about it. I mean, maybe it ends up sort of being serendipitous where it's like the thing you thought was so bad, you know, losing out on. And it's not good to lose out on Anthony Davis. And I don't care what anybody says. From just a talent standpoint, it's not good to lose Kyrie either. Same goes for Al. But maybe this thing that you think is so, you know, horrible, at the end of the day, it turns out your team's better than you thought it would be. I mean, do I think they're going to win a championship next year? No. But could they be better than we think they are? And could they have more star power than we think they have? Yeah.
Now, just because this means the end of the Sports Hub Celtics show for this season doesn't mean we're going to stop the Celtics conversation. I see a bunch of you hanging. You want to talk about the C's and the draft on Thursday night, the offseason thus far. We'll get right to you right after the Sports Hub headlines here with Sarge, 617-779-0985. Again, it doesn't mean the Celtics conversation is going to stop going forward either. It just means the show for the season is done. As my friend has asked me, you know, my friend Keith you've met before, my loudmouth friend, he's like, what happens, like, if there's big breaking news, like, you know, the P.K. Subban news, which Sarge is going to tell you about in a minute? Are you going to talk about that during the Celtics show? I'm like, no, because it's the Celtics show. And he's like, what if World War III starts? It's like, no, we don't talk about it. It's the Sports Hub Celtics show. We'll get to all the other news later. It doesn't matter even if war breaks out here, outside our door in Dorchester. We can't talk about it. It's just Celtics. All right, with all that said, we'll get to your Celtics calls right after this. Sarge will tell you where P.K. Subban is now going to have to find a new home. Big NHL trade today. I'll tell you about that right here in the Sports Hub headlines. It's 98.5 Sports Hub.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. It's guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Be honest, wouldn't you like to play more golf this year? As the State Golf Association for Massachusetts, Mass Golf is ready to help, and they want you to become a member. By joining, you'll automatically get a handicap index from the USGA, access to play exclusive private clubs through Mass Golf events, and a bundle of additional benefits. Best of all, it costs just $55 to join. Visit massgolf.org and make today a golf day.
Looking for a place to eat that has a little something for everyone? Come to Route 1 Grillhouse in Saugus. The most mouth-watering dishes, such as their ribs, steak tips, seafood, and pizzas. Wash it down with their extensive martini list and large selection of draft beer. Route 1 Grillhouse has a private function room that accommodates up to 70 guests for any function. This is the spot for you and your friends as the weather gets warmer with their outdoor seating. Come on in to the family-owned Route 1 Grillhouse in Saugus, the perfect place to be.